The Pit Stop. This stop could be life or death. An American Haunts mystery. Written by Carmen D'Souza. Narrated by Austin Walp.
Prologue. The old wooden cafe appeared safe enough, but the lack of surrounding cars gave Gino Canal pause as he opened the door of his hybrid. The GPS he and Sheila had been using had directed them off the highway in search of gas, but there were no gas stations around, just one country store on the outskirts of this Northern California town. Sheila opened her door, but he waved her off.
"Stay in the car. Let me check this place out."
As usual, she did what she wanted and jumped out anyway.
"I have to go. I've had to go since that last exit you ignored."
"Fine,"
Gino replied, walking toward the entrance, Sheila on his heels. He listened for sounds of life, but nothing but utter silence greeted him. Normally there'd be a hum of electricity, birds chirping, something. A lopsided sign behind a dusty window pane indicated the cafe was open, though. He turned to his wife.
"What do you think?"
"I think I need a bathroom. Now."
Gino reached for the doorknob, but before he could turn the tarnished brass handle, the door screeched open as if the wind or someone had opened it. Bells tinkled above the doorframe, announcing his arrival.
"Hello?"
he called, but his voice faded into the stillness of the store. The only noise came from the creaking of the wood planks below the new Crocs his wife had talked him into buying.
"Is anyone here?"
A crackling sound started up behind the counter. Someone had turned on an old AM radio. The music that emanated was reminiscent of old 50s-style music his grandparents used to listen to.
"Afternoon,"
a man called out in a hoarse voice as he popped up from behind the register.
"You kids ain't from around here, are ya?"
No, sir.
Gino stuttered, not sure why he couldn't find his voice.
"We're heading to a wedding, and we just ran low on gas, and we're wondering if there was a gas station nearby."
The man chuckled.
"Son, you don't need gas. You've got a full tank."
Gino shook his head.
"Excuse me, how would..."
Sheila tugged on his arm, then flashed him the look he knew all too well. They'd stopped 100 times on this trip.
"Sir, is there a restroom my wife could use?"
"Round back, but she doesn't have to go." "What's that racket, Joe?"
An old woman stepped through a doorway on the other side of the room. Gino gasped and grabbed Sheila's hand, pulling her toward the door.
"Let's get out of here."
"But..."
"Trust me, honey, something isn't right."
The old man stepped around the counter.
"Just a couple of lost souls, Martha."
As the man moved toward them, Gino felt beads of sweat dampen his forehead. But the man just opened the door, allowing them to leave.
"We'll see Yin's back here soon."
He lowered his head and stared Gino deep in the eyes.
"Don't you recognize me, son?"
Gino nudged Sheila through the doorway toward their vehicle.
"What the heck are you doing, Gino?"
his wife screeched. Gino's heart pounded in his chest.
"That was my grandpap, Joe. He died 20 years ago.
Chapter 1. Gino started upright. He swiped his hand across his damp forehead. Perspiration had saturated his mop of hair. He was long overdue for a haircut. He patted the right side of the bed and found his wife's arm. She rolled over in response.
"Same dream again, honey?"
she mumbled into her pillow.
"Yeah."
He rolled out of bed and headed to the bathroom.
"I just don't understand. They've been dead for 20 years. Why am I dreaming about them? And they lived in Pennsylvania their entire life. All of our family does. We don't even know anyone in California."
He leaned against the doorframe and stared at his wife as if she held the answer. She must have felt his gaze because she opened one eye, obviously not happy with him waking her up so early. But he needed to make sure that she was there, that they were alive and not in some weird purgatory type of reality. He didn't even believe in the hereafter, let alone an in-between dimension. Sheila propped herself up on her elbow and stared at him.
"It's just a dream, Gino. Let it go. It doesn't mean anything."
"But don't you see?"
He walked over and sat down on the edge of the bed.
"It does. My grandfather was the reason I became a cop in the first place. And now, ever since I've made detective, their deaths have haunted me. It just doesn't make sense."
He shook his head.
"I'm sorry, babe. Go back to sleep. You're right. It doesn't mean anything."
He swept a strand of hair away from her face and kissed her forehead. Leaning back to look at her, he smiled.
"Although, some of the dream was accurate. Like how we can't go on a trip without stopping every 2 hours."
He laughed and she smacked his arm.
"Go to work, you weirdo."
She rolled over, dismissing the conversation. After Gino filled his mega coffee mug, he hopped into his Camaro and tore off toward the station.
Huh, hybrid vehicle. Not even close.
Was that what his dream was telling him? That he needed to get rid of his gas-hogging Z28? He would, but he only drove a few miles to work, so it'd take 100 years to make up the difference in price. No, something about the dream was deeper. He just hadn't put the pieces together yet. The one thing that kept tugging at his mind was that he hadn't recognized his grandfather's face at first. The sound of his grandmother's voice was what had him pulling his wife out the door to safety. But when his grandfather had stepped in front of him, asking him if he recognized him, why was he even thinking about this? Sheila was right. It was just a dream. He bit down on his lip and stared at the grade school children crossing the street in front of him. The crossing guard waved a greeting. Camp Creek was too small of a town for the deaths of 2 people to go unsolved, especially 2 of the greatest people who'd ever walked the earth. It wasn't right. Too many unanswered questions shadowed his grandparents' deaths, even though the ME had documented their deaths as death by natural causes. Gino inhaled a large breath as he pressed on the gas, then looked up at the sky at nothing in particular. People just did it because it made them feel better. As much as he'd love to believe that his grandparents were in heaven, he simply didn't believe in life after death. Even if his pap wasn't in another realm, though, he still deserved answers, and Gino intended to get those answers.
Chapter 2. Gino leaned back in the booth at the crowded diner, wondering why the captain had asked him to meet him alone. The restaurant was a regular haunt for officers to grab a half-priced meal and free coffee, but he hadn't been here in years. Too many memories. Whenever the detectives mentioned the pit stop as their destination for lunch, he'd politely pass, citing he was going to meet Sheila for lunch, outside the elementary school where she taught 5th grade. She always liked it when he'd show up right before the lunch bell, toting 2 subs, a bag of chips, and drinks, whisking her away from her normal bagged lunch in the teacher's lounge. The owners of the diner obviously loved the police department's patronage, as it kept riffraff away. The once quiet neighborhood of the 50s had morphed into a crime-filled haven. It made no difference that Camp Creek was a small town, almost made it worse as bored teenagers and adults seeking thrills made way for drug dealers and other types of criminal activity. As Gino gazed around, he understood part of his dream. The rail car, dining car, was ancient. The place hadn't changed since his grandfather had brought him here. Construction workers and businessmen alike occupied red, vinyl-covered stools alongside the white countertop to partake in the daily special. A greasy patty-melt burger with fries, or homemade meatloaf and mashed potatoes smothered in gravy filled their plates. Captain Jeff Jackson flopped down in the booth, inhaling deeply, a wide smile lifting his cheeks.
"Don't you love this place?"
"Yeah."
Gino lied lightly. Always a good idea not to offend the captain. Of course, there had to be a reason Captain Jackson invited him. The detective in him was instantly curious. Jackson's mouth quirked up.
But you're wondering why I asked you to meet me here.
At the sound of bells, Gino glanced toward the entrance, but seeing no one, turned his attention back to his captain.
Yeah, the thought crossed my mind.
Jackson ran the back of his hand up the stubble on his normally clean-shaven face.
I like the food and the country music. Most restaurants have New Age blaring through the speakers and serve rabbit food.
Uh-huh. Gino agreed, though his stomach handled those eateries better than the food at these types of places. Maybe it was because Sheila forced him to eat some combination of grilled chicken and vegetables most nights of the week. Of course, he couldn't complain. Weightlifting his entire life, and even when he was heavy into football, hadn't given him six-pack abs until she'd changed his diet.
But you didn't invite me here for the food and music, Captain. What gives?
The waitress approached, halting his answer. Her eyes roamed over Gino longer than necessary. He swore women were attracted to his wedding ring.
Like moths to a flame,
he'd told his wife. The woman pulled out her pad.
What are you boys having?
Two specials with sweet tea, Sally.
Jackson ordered for the both of them, scooping up and handing her both of the food-crusted plastic menus.
Probably better,
Gino thought, since he had planned to order a chef's salad, which would have probably brought into question his manhood in front of his superior. The woman smiled and walked off, swaying her hips to the country music that filled the restaurant. Jackson's eyes remained glued to her as she made her way to the service station. Maybe Sally was the real reason Jackson liked the diner, not the food and music. Gino wanted an answer to why he was here, but figured he'd better wait until Sally returned with their drinks, so he'd have Jackson's full attention. Gino swept the room with his eyes again, a habit he'd probably never stop. It was as ingrained as breathing was. After a few minutes, Sally dropped off the drinks and sauntered over to a table of construction workers, working all her mama gave her, it seemed, to increase her tips. Although Gino was certain the music was satellite-fed, as there had been no commercials, just the DJ he always heard when he zoomed past the station on his Sirius radio, the speaker above his head crackled, like an old AM radio. Then he heard a sound he hadn't heard in years. Someone lighting a pipe. The gurgling noise made him smile, and then the sweet, pungent odor invaded his senses, taking him back about 30 years. He turned to see who was smoking in a public restaurant, but the booth behind him was empty.
There was a double homicide yesterday.
Captain Jackson's voice broke through his reflections of the past. Gino swung around to meet Jackson's gaze.
What? Why wasn't I called?
Jackson cocked his head south.
Not in Camp Creek. Next county over.
Gino narrowed his eyes.
What does that have to do with me, then? The lead detective, Mark Waters, called this morning. His father, Wilson Waters, worked a case with me years ago, so he knew me.
Jackson lowered his head and spoke in a confidential tone.
The murders mirrored your grandparents' homicides.
Chapter 3. Gino swallowed hard.
Homicides. No one has ever referred to my grandparents' deaths as homicides.
Jackson took a sip of his iced tea, then flashed a quick peek around the diner.
Well, I've always thought it was suspicious. Your grandfather meant the world to me. He was my mentor. And their deaths have troubled me for 20 years, as they did Wilson Waters at the time. Even though we worked in different departments. Since Wilson had gone to school with your pap, and the property sat on the county line, we'd worked it together. But there was nothing to hint of foul play, other than our gut instinct, so our superiors made us drop it.
A shiver swept through Gino.
I've always wondered. Even as a teenager, it didn't make any sense. What are the similarities?
He glanced over his shoulder again. Haunted by the sound of the bells and the smell of the pipe that he knew couldn't have been his imagination.
What are you looking for, Gino?
Jackson's voice held an edge of irritation, and Gino couldn't blame him because of how strange he was behaving. He must look like a paranoid schizophrenic. Gino turned back toward his captain, afraid to voice his question, but he had to know.
Did you see someone smoking a pipe?
Maybe the man had gone to the restroom. Captain's brow furrowed.
Customers aren't allowed to smoke inside the restaurant.
Gino nodded. He knew that. He'd just hoped he wasn't losing his mind.
Joe, pick up!
A woman's raspy voice rattled from behind the counter. Gino gasped, then focused his gaze on the woman who sounded just like his grandmother, calling out for his pap.
Are you all right?
Captain asked.
You look as if you saw a ghost.
Did she just call for Joe to pick up?
Captain huffed out a breath.
Yeah. Joanne's one of the waitresses. I think you need to lay off the coffee, Gino. You're as nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs.
Inhaling a deep breath, Gino sank into the booth, focusing his eyes on his captain, and did his best to look completely sane. Jackson leaned forward.
Back to your grandparents. Have you read their file?
Actually, no.
Gino admitted. He had planned to read it today, but wasn't sure how the captain would react to him researching a 20-year-old case.
I've always wanted to, though.
Captain sucked air through his teeth, a habit the other cops mocked behind his back.
So you haven't pulled it? Never touched it?
Nervous at once, Gino shook his head. What was the captain insinuating?
That's what I was afraid of. It's missing. I went to pull it this morning when I got the call.
Jackson stopped speaking, his eyes glancing up as an elderly gentleman approached their table, carrying two platters. The discolored apron he wore, which had probably been white at some point, indicated that he probably worked in the kitchen.
Two specials, gentlemen.
The man stopped mid-sentence, staring at Gino as though he knew him.
Gino!
Gino glared at the man, questioning how he knew his name. He hadn't been in here since he was a kid. The old man bent down in front of him until they were at eye level.
You've grown up.
He flashed a smile, showing off a set of either nicotine or coffee-stained teeth.
Don't you recognize me, son?
What did you say?
Gino asked each word individually, his voice demanding.
Your pap used to bring you in here.
The old man's voice faltered, obviously taken aback. Gino stood and brushed past the old man.
I'm sorry, excuse me.
He needed to get some fresh air. He rushed toward the exit, opened the door, then started to walk out of the restaurant, but stopped and looked up.
No bells.
His stomach plunged, and he thought he might get sick. Chapter 4. Gino paced the parking lot as his mind whirled. Was he crazy? The dreams, the radio, the pipe scent, the bells. It couldn't all be a coincidence. He hunched over, resting his hands on his knees as his mind battled with reality.
Ghosts aren't real,
he repeatedly muttered to himself. A familiar voice echoed in his head. But this time it wasn't a dream or ghost chimes. An embedded memory from his childhood when he was learning to ride his bicycle. His pap had scolded him for wanting to give up after he'd run into the garbage bins sitting at the end of the neighbor's driveway and started to cry.
Nonsense, boy.
His pap had rumbled in his deep voice.
Stand up, wipe off your backside, and get back on that bike. You gonna let something knock you down? Show your pap that you're a man.
Every time Gino had wanted to give up at the academy, studying for the sergeant's exams, getting Sheila, he laughed at how he'd refused to back off no matter how many times she'd insisted she didn't date cops, even though her father was a cop. They'd dated off and on in high school, but he hadn't seen her when she was away at college. When he spotted her at a neighborhood barbecue, he had to have her, and wouldn't take no for an answer, insisting she go out with him at least once. Whenever he felt like giving up on anything, He'd remember his pap's words. Gino inhaled a deep breath, stood to his full 6'2", then walked back into the diner. The old man approached him again.
"Sorry, Gino, didn't mean to spook you. Your pap and I go way back. Before he passed, that is. We played football together. Of course, we didn't have the gear yins have today."
The old man tapped his head.
"They just gave us a strip of leather to put over our noggins."
He chuckled and turned, gesturing that Gino should walk with him.
"Your pap was a good man, going into the service and all, then on to being a cop."
The old man stopped, then rested his cold and clammy hand on Gino's forearm.
"Your pap ever mentioned me?"
Gino shook his head.
"Name's Alan Jones, but everyone calls me Smitty."
He started walking again, stopping in front of the booth where the captain still sat, staring up at Gino as though he had grown an extra head.
"See yins around,"
Smitty called over his shoulder as he scurried back toward the kitchen. Captain notched his head up, then glared at Gino, sucking his teeth again.
"What's up?"
Gino sank into the booth, leaning forward.
"Tell me how this crime scene mirrors my grandparents' deaths."
Jackson moved to the end of the booth, resting his back against the window.
"I just got off the phone. I set up a time to go inspect the scene, but apparently there's not much to see."
He propped his elbow up on the table.
"What always struck me as odd with your grandparents' deaths is that they both died peacefully in their sleep, on the same night."
Captain turned and looked around as though someone might be eavesdropping.
"Good," Gino thought. "He still has some preservation skills."
He'd wondered about that when Captain had sat with his back facing the door, as opposed to the window, as he now sat. Captain Jackson leaned over the table.
"Your pap was the epitome of good health. Heck, he worked out more than you or I do, and he was only in his early 50s. According to Detective Waters, they found these folks the same way, with no signs of a struggle. Doesn't it seem strange that not just one, but two couples would die together in their sleep?"
Confused, Gino shook his head.
"Maybe, but their deaths are 20 years apart. Why would you think that it's murder?" "Because Waters does. Evidently, a man letting his dog out to do its business saw someone dressed all in black leaving the house in the middle of the night. He assumed it was a burglary, but did the smart thing and called 911. Not 10 minutes later, the police arrived, found nothing missing, but discovered two dead bodies."
Chapter 5. Gino followed Captain Jackson and Detective Mark Waters into the house of the murdered couple. The detective had a commanding gaze and a strong handshake for his age. Gino guessed him to be in his late 20s. Not that Gino was old at 32, but he'd certainly spent more time on the streets than Mark Waters. And yet Detective Waters had that seasoned look. Eyes that read not just what your lips spoke, but what your entire body said. In his years as a police officer and detective, Gino had learned that you listen to people with your eyes, not your ears. Bad guys could utter a lie without missing a beat, but their body language screamed the truth. Detective Waters passed two closed doors, then stepped inside the last room at the end of the hallway.
"Forensics is already dusted for prints, so help yourself, gentlemen."
He shrugged.
"Though, there's not much to see. Nothing in the room was out of place, according to their daughter, who came in this morning and gave a statement. She's an RN who had just gotten off the night shift, so she came right in."
Gino shifted his gaze from the detective to take in the room. The bedroom was immaculate. Not one crooked picture. No dust on the nightstands. Even the couple's slippers were lined up perfectly by the bed, ready for them to step into the next morning. Captain strolled toward the master bath, and Gino walked over to the bookcase adjacent to the bed. Something wasn't right. He knelt down in front of the case and spotted the one thing in the room that wasn't meticulously in its place. 8 photo albums, each with a description of its contents, stood upright on the second shelf. The retired woman must have been into scrapbooking.
Sheila had attempted to make a scrapbook of their wedding album, but had given up on the tedious task. It was clear that the woman who had made these was a perfectionist. Each bound book had a label of either a year or event, and only one was moved a fraction out of place. Gino pulled out the album with the embossed title, Thurber's Team, written on the spine. Waters moved up behind him and peered over his shoulder.
What you got?
Gino shook his head as he flipped open the book with his latex-covered hand.
I don't know, but it was the only thing in the room that was out of place.
He traced the outline of the blank first page. Based on the small amount of residue used to affix a picture, a photo was missing. Gino flipped to the next page, which held multiple photos of young men in football gear. On one of the pages, 57 was scribbled onto the frame of the black and white photograph. Upon flipping through the pages, he discovered every page had at least one picture missing. Captain crossed the room and hovered over the detectives.
What do you find, Gino? I think I found our first lead, Captain.
He pointed to one of the pictures on the page. The image was faint, and there was barely an outline of a man in the background, but he'd recognize that smile anywhere.
That there's my pap.
Chapter 6 Gino pushed the food around on his plate. His mind kept returning to the picture of his grandfather in the dead couple's photo album.
Ouch!
He darted his eyes across the table, frowning at his wife.
Why did you kick me?
Sheila smiled. I'm sorry, was that your leg? I didn't know you were here. I thought I was eating alone.
Funny.
He peered back down at his food.
What's going on, Gino? You haven't said a word since you walked in the house.
Well, unless you count the grunt you muttered as you tromped up the steps. She rested her hand on his arm.
Talk to me. Is that dream still bothering you?
He exhaled a deep breath and threw back his head. If it were only that simple. How could he tell his wife that he'd been hearing ghost chimes and smelling pipes that weren't there? She'd think he was insane. He was starting to wonder himself. Gino tapped his thumb on the table, but then stopped himself. He'd been trying to break that nervous gesture. He couldn't question a suspect with a tic that'd give him away if you were trying to convince a suspect that he had evidence when he didn't.
Not exactly.
He couldn't lie to Sheila. She'd see right through him. 10 years of marriage, and he swore she knew him better than he knew himself. He ran his hand across his mouth.
Dang, another tic.
Usually, when a criminal ran his hand over his mouth, it meant he was planning to lie. A subtle way of admitting that even he didn't believe the words he was about to speak. Gino decided to start with the truth.
There was a double homicide last night.
In Camp Creek?
Her eyes widened as she covered her mouth with her hand. Her body language was easy to read, always had been.
No, Edinburgh.
Her hand fell to her lap as though it were okay that the homicides had happened in the neighboring town instead of Camp Creek.
So, why are you involved?
Their deaths mirrored the deaths of my grandparents.
But I thought...
Yeah, me too,
he interrupted.
It just doesn't make sense. I'm having all these crazy dreams, and then suddenly Captain takes me aside to tell me about two homicides that mirror my grandparents' deaths, and that he'd always thought their deaths were suspicious?
He said that?
She cut in. Gino nodded.
Yeah, but that's not the worst part. When I got to the crime scene, I found a photo album of an old high school football team from the 50s, and when I checked it out, there were several pictures missing. But even stranger, my grandfather was on the team.
As if not understanding, Sheila leaned forward.
Your grandfather's picture was at the crime scene?
He nodded again.
Exactly. Wait a second.
Gino jumped up from the table and ran upstairs. He pulled down the attic stairs and climbed up. Walking carefully, stepping only on the beams, he made his way to the back of the attic. The house had been in his family for generations. His parents had stored all of his grandparents' items in the attic after their deaths,
and the idea of throwing away their personal stuff just didn't seem right. After all, it was their house. His parents had rented it out after his grandparents' deaths, but said that the home was his whenever he got married. A box of old photo albums sat in the corner, covered with years of dust. He knelt down beside it and sorted through the dates his grandmother had marked on the side. There it was, 1957. He flipped through a few pages until he saw the name he was searching for. He'd just spoken with him this morning.
Smitty.
Chapter 7. He recognized the man's face immediately. But the strange thing was, Smitty wasn't focusing on the camera. The scraggly-looking teen was staring off to the left, toward a few cheerleaders standing in a loose circle. Gino stood and walked toward the single overhead light bulb on the roof. He held the picture up to the light. Yep. He knew one of those cheerleaders looked familiar. Even stranger, his grandmother was also not paying attention to the girls in her group, or the camera. Martha's eyes were peering to the right. Gino searched the picture for his grandfather. He was standing in front of them, a large, toothy grin stretching his face as he watched the game, or practice game. He'd always been a happy man, always had a joke to share. Were Smitty and Martha staring at his grandpap Joe, or someone else? Or maybe this was all just a stupid coincidence.
What are you doing?
Gino gasped as Sheila's voice broke into his thoughts at the same time her head popped up through the attic opening.
Oh my God, you almost gave me a heart attack, woman.
He whooshed out a gust of air, feeling his heart thrash double time inside his chest. She huffed through her nose at the same time that she laughed. As jumpy as you are at home, how in the world do you ever search buildings? She shook her head. Come on down before you fall through the ceiling. That's all we need. Gino pulled the clingy plastic film back and carefully removed the old photo from the sticky page, attempting not to tear it. Once removed, he tucked the picture in his pocket, returned the album to the box, and then carefully traced his steps back toward the stairs. Sheila was right. They didn't need an extra expense of having to fix a hole in the ceiling. What had been going on with his grandmother and Smitty? They couldn't have been having an affair. Smitty wasn't even a good-looking guy. His grandfather, on the other hand, was a catch. His grandmother had always joked around about how he'd swept her off her feet, right after he plowed into her off the football field while tackling the wide receiver. She'd said the moment he picked her up off the ground and stared into her eyes, she knew. She'd said it was love at first sight, and she'd never been able to see another man in that way again. Gino couldn't imagine that she'd have cheated on him, especially in the 1950s. Who did that back then? He backed down the stairs and bumped right into his wife and jumped again.
Stop sneaking up on me,
he demanded, smiling. Gino, what's going on? Sheila crossed her arms in front of her, accentuating her breasts. All of a sudden, he didn't care about pictures and grandparents. It was time to forget all this crazy stuff, until tomorrow.
Let's go to bed early, he grinned. It's been a long day, and I really didn't sleep much last night.
Tomorrow, he'd make the connections. He always thought better after an early night with his wife. He'd sleep deeper, so his mind could connect the dots he'd missed in the daylight hours. His wife took his hand and led him toward their bedroom. Evidently, she was ready to forget her day and the screaming fifth graders she taught, too.
Sheila,
he started, not certain how to ask this stupid question, but his wife had been extremely close to his grandmother when she was a child. Since she didn't have grandparents, Martha had been like her godmother. Sheila and he had been best friends all through grade school, until he saw her as the opposite gender in high school, that is. It was weird at first, but after their first kiss under the bleachers, he knew she was the woman he'd marry someday. Even his mother had been upset when they'd stopped dating when Sheila moved away for college. But it had worked out for the best. He'd dated enough women in those 4 years to recognize what a catch Sheila was. When he saw her at the age of 22, he knew immediately that she was the woman for him. After he finally convinced her to go out with him, they married within 6 months.
Yes?
She asked as she walked into their bedroom.
Never mind.
He pulled her into his arms, thinking about their first kiss, always had his mouth watering to taste her. He pulled both her arms up above her head and turned her body so she was up against the wall. Taking advantage of the position, he pressed his mouth against hers. She opened up to him, allowing his tongue to explore her. 10 years, and he still loved kissing her. He moved to her neck, tickling her with his breath, making her squirm.
You know,
she whispered in his ear, breathless from just one kiss. There's a bed 3 feet behind you where you can take full advantage of me. He lifted his head and stared into her eyes. She knew him so well. Keeping hold of her hands, he pressed his lips to hers again, while moving her to the bed. He held both of her hands above her head with one hand now, while his other hand unbuttoned her sweater.
I love it when you allow me to take advantage of you, Mrs. Canal, and when you wear these sweaters with all these buttons. All you need now is a strand of pearls.
She giggled in response.
You're not supposed to giggle.
He laughed, capturing her lips again and taking full advantage of her body, looking forward to the moment where she couldn't take it any longer, and her hands would break free from his so she could pull him tighter against her body. After they'd both worked out the day's stress, they each released a sigh of total contentment. A few seconds later, Sheila made her way to the master bath.
Babe,
he called out to her before she shut the door. She turned around, so beautiful standing there half-dressed in the muted light from the bathroom.
Mm-hmm,
he shook off the thoughts of following her into the shower.
Did Gran ever mention someone named Smitty?
No, but she wrote about him in her diary.
Chapter 8. The driver sat across the street in a new Chevy pickup, holding a pair of binoculars aimed at Gino Canal's house. If it wasn't one thing, it was another. All this should have ended with the death of Gino's grandparents 20 years ago, but it seemed the secrets would never go away. Killing the first time had been difficult, but doing it again had been harder. If there had been another way to handle the situation, it wouldn't have been necessary. But sometimes, people just wouldn't let the past die. They continued to try to resolve problems instead of letting the past disappear. Now, the problem was Martha Canal's diary. According to Sue Thurber, Martha had documented every secret she'd ever heard inside her diary. For some reason, women back in the 50s tended to record all their personal secrets, and others. Nowadays, narcissistic people simply documented their life on Facebook for the voyeurs of the world. The radio crackled, as if the light rock station had suddenly changed to an out-of-area frequency. Odd. According to the salesman, the radio was a top-of-the-line digital stereo. It wasn't supposed to have static. Figures. It seemed you couldn't rely on anyone to tell the truth, especially a car salesman. It was as if they purposely tried to take advantage of the buyer by recommending faulty aftermarket items to pad their pockets. A chill swept through the truck, and the driver raised the window in response. Shifting the vehicle into reverse, the driver started to back up, but saw a figure standing behind the truck and slammed on the brakes. When the driver whipped around to look out the rear window, nothing was visible except inky darkness and a deserted street. Suddenly, the crackly radio blared out music at decibels so high that the truck windows rattled in the darkness. The engine revved as the gear shifter moved into drive, and the truck lurched forward, slamming the driver into the seat, causing a shrill scream to penetrate the air as the truck barreled toward a street lamp. The speedometer's white arm moved to the right with speed almost as fast as the truck careening toward the corner and the waiting pole that would split the truck down the middle like a hot knife through melted butter. The steering wheel refused to move, and the brake and accelerator pedals were non-existent. At the last second, the driver cringed, preparing for the crash, but nothing happened.
opening one eye cautiously, and then the other, the driver realized that the car had never moved from the parking space across from Gino's house. The radio had fallen silent, and the window was down as it had been only moments earlier. Heart racing and blood rushing, the driver carefully turned the ignition. The Chevy sprang to life with a quiet purr, and the soft rock station started up again. Melodic guitar lines from an old Santana tune streamed through the speakers at the radio's normal volume. But as the title of the song scrolled across the radio display, the driver blanched. Evil Ways. Chapter 9. Gino stood behind a one-way glass, watching as Detective Mark Waters interviewed Alan Jones, a.k.a. Smitty. They didn't have anything on Smitty other than the fact that the pictures of the same football team that had Smitty's image in them, that Gino had found among his pap's pictures, had apparently been missing from the album at the Thurbers' house. Smitty had gone to school with the Thurbers and the Canals. Unfortunately, other than the fact that both couples went to high school together and were found in the same way, there was no proof of homicide in either case. But when Gino called Waters this morning, sharing the information he found, the detective had asked Smitty to come in and talk. He wasn't under arrest, this was just a gathering of information, hoping they could break him into divulging evidence. Sheila was still searching through the attic for his grandmother's diary. It had been so long since she read it that she couldn't remember why his grandmother had mentioned Smitty. But it wasn't because Martha was having an affair, she remembered. Sheila had told Gino that reading her godmother's diary was like reading a romance novel full of scandalous friends and true love that was meant to be. Detective Waters leaned back in his chair, chewing on his pen as a nervous-looking Smitty picked at a nick on the table.
"Please state your full name for the record,"
Waters asked as he pressed start on an antiquated recording device. Gino snickered, wondering if the officers who had interrogated Lee Harvey Oswald had used the same type of device. Gino's department wasn't high-tech, but at least they had an updated video and audio recording system. Smitty squirmed in his seat before answering.
"Alan Smith Jones, but everyone's always called me Smitty."
"And you're the owner of the pit stop?"
"Yes, sir. Inherited from my granddad a few years back."
"What did you do before then?"
Waters continued with questions meant to set a baseline for Smitty's responses. By asking simple questions first, the accused would let down his guard just enough that, when the detective asked a pertinent question, either he'd answer honestly or stumble all over himself trying to come up with a quick lie, which would allow the detective to spot the difference.
"I've worked at the pit stop my entire life,"
Smitty answered.
"So, how long have you known Sue and Nelson Thurber, Mr. Jones?"
"Darn near my entire life also. We'd all gone to high school together."
"And when's the last time you saw them?"
Smitty scratched his head.
"About a week or so, I guess. They like to come in for Sunday brunch at my diner every once in a while."
"Do you know why anyone would want to kill them?"
Smitty sighed.
"They were good people. It's a darn shame."
Gino watched the interview in frustration, realizing Smitty hadn't answered the question and was nervous about something. But every word he spoke dripped with truth. Matter of fact, Gino didn't think Smitty'd be able to tell a lie. If they knew the correct question to ask, Gino was certain they could get to the bottom of his involvement with the two couples' deaths.
"Did you like Sue, Smitty?"
Waters continued.
"Sure,"
Smitty answered, moving around in his seat like a little boy, almost looking embarrassed.
"We all did."
Gino leaned forward, closer to the glass as though he'd be able to get a better view than he already had. He wanted to be in there asking the questions. This was it. Would Waters catch that subtle change in Smitty's posture? Detective Waters leaned back in his chair and crossed his legs, causing Gino to smile. He had noticed, and now it was time for the "you can tell me we're friends" approach. Gino watched as Smitty leaned back in his chair too, the mirror neurons in full swing. Mark Waters lifted his cup of coffee, but he didn't take a sip. Instead, he stopped midway to his mouth.
So, did you and Sue date in high school?
Smitty's mouth turned up just slightly at the edges, and now there was a pronounced reddening in his cheeks, but he only nodded as an answer. Mark took a sip of his coffee, allowing a slight pause, nodding in understanding.
She was a nice-looking woman, wasn't she?
The old man nodded again, but this time stole a peek around the room as though he were searching for an escape. He was shutting down, realizing he'd said too much and was preparing to flee, and they had nothing to keep him. Waters tilted his head again, displaying an "I'm your friend" demeanor.
Have you and Sue been seeing each other, Smitty?
No, sir.
Smitty whipped his head back and forth.
Just when she comes into the restaurant is all.
And how often does she come to your restaurant?
Smitty jerked his head up to meet the detective's eyes, then flashed a glance at the two-way mirror.
Am I under arrest, detective?
No, no.
Waters waved his hands.
I'm just trying to figure out how the Thurbers died. Maybe even the Canals. You were their friend, right? So I figured you'd want to help.
For the first time since Gino had met Smitty, he didn't look like a fragile old man. He held Mark Waters' gaze.
I'd start with Nurse Becky, then.
The old man stood up.
Is it okay if I go now? My wife is all by herself, and the lunch crowd will be in soon.
Waters stood up beside him.
Becky? As in Rebecca Thurber, their daughter?
Smitty walked out the door without answering.
Chapter 10. Gino stepped through the door of the adjacent room and watched as Smitty scampered off down the corridor. He cocked his head at Waters.
The Thurber's daughter?
Waters shrugged, evidently as confused as he was.
We spoke with her right after their bodies were discovered. She came to the house and said everything appeared normal, and she couldn't imagine who would have snuck into her parents' house and killed them. And of course, other than the neighbor stating he saw someone leaving the Thurbers' home around 3 a.m., there's nothing indicating a homicide.
Detective Waters reached for the phone at his side and pulled it out of its holder. He glanced at the screen, then nodded.
M.E. wants me. Maybe he found something. Want to come?
Sure.
Gino agreed. Mark tossed his half-full coffee cup in the trash and headed down the hall, and Gino trailed behind him. He didn't really want to go to the M.E.'s office. Unlike some cops, the smell of death still got to him. Maybe he had a better sniffer than some officers, since he didn't smoke. But he'd gotten so familiar with the stench of death that he could smell it on someone who hadn't died yet. Sheila had introduced him to one of the older teachers at her school, and he'd known immediately that the man was dying. When he'd asked later, Sheila confirmed that the man had cancer. He died a week later. It wasn't a skill he was proud of, that was for sure. He'd rather not be able to smell some of the criminals he'd handcuffed and thrown in the back of his cruiser. But it did come in handy a few times when he was serving a warrant, and the spouse of the wanted individual claimed they hadn't seen the person in months. All he had to do was step a few feet into the apartment and he could sniff him out. Most criminals had the smell of fear, which smelled like excrement and sweat. The other officers had teased him about it after the first arrest, saying he had a future as a police dog if he couldn't pass the sergeant's exam. Luckily, he'd passed. The M.E. Rick Cooper, according to the nameplate on the door, opened the cooler and pulled out one of the Thurbers as soon as Mark and Gino arrived. He unzipped the bag, revealing the feet of the victim, and Gino was almost positive he was looking at Nelson Thurber's feet. Even bloated and discolored, no woman would have that big of feet. At least, he hoped not.
You see this?
Cooper pointed to a small hole between the man's toes.
That's what some junkies do. Those who are still trying to balance a normal life with their addiction, that is.
Only, I don't think this 70-something-year-old couple was addicted to heroin. Nope, I think you gentlemen have a couple homicides on your hands. I've ordered a tox screen, so I'll let you know what I find.
Waters nodded and turned to Gino.
I guess we need to talk with RN Rebecca Thurber again, he said, as if thinking aloud.
He certainly wasn't asking for Gino's advice. Mark Waters seemed to be on the ball. Obviously, his father had taught him a thing or two. On the way back to the station, Gino shifted in his seat to face Mark.
Jackson said your father worked as a detective with him on my grandparents' case, Joe and Martha Canal. Did he ever mention their case?
Mark pulled his eyes off the road for a second and looked him in the eyes, nodding.
He didn't like it. Always said there was something that didn't add up. But then the chief had told him to drop it. My dad had gone to school with your grandfather.
Gino blanched at that.
How's that possible?
Waters laughed. Not impossible, just unusual. My dad went into the military right after high school and made a career out of it. He didn't get married until he was 40. I remember him studying the case when I was a child. I guess I was 8 years old, but I wanted to know everything my dad knew about being a detective. I wanted so badly to please him. He was such a tough guy.
Why do you think he took the death so hard? Besides being high school friends, that is.
They were close. They'd been in the service together, too. But it seemed like there was more. He just couldn't let it go. When I'd come home early from school once, a few months later, I found him crying in his study.
Mark turned to look at Gino again.
My dad didn't cry. As I said, he was a tough man. I walked up to him, afraid that something may have happened to my mother, but I saw the same file he'd always pore over, as though he'd missed something. When I touched him on the arm, he jumped up. It was so sudden that I thought he was going to hit me. Instead, he slammed the folder shut and walked out of the room, mumbling something that sounded like, "All my fault."
Waters dropped his head slightly, shaking it.
I never heard him talk about the case again, and he died soon after. But when this happened, I knew something was up. I'd heard my dad say too many times how it just didn't make sense that both of them had died peacefully in their sleep.
Gino huffed out a breath.
No, it doesn't.
Wait, did you request the file?
Which file?
The file on my grandparents' deaths. It's missing.
Waters pulled to a stop outside the police station.
Oh, that was my dad's personal file he'd compiled. He wouldn't have taken the station's file.
It's missing,
Gino repeated.
Could you check to see if maybe he did?
Mark narrowed his eyes.
Why would my father take the file?
He shook his head.
Maybe he found something that he didn't want to.
Waters opened up the door and jumped out, slamming the door behind him. Gino followed his lead and stepped out of the Ford Police Edition.
Mark, I wasn't accusing your father of anything, but you said yourself that he thought it was his fault.
He'd meant that he couldn't figure it out. If he had hurt them, he never would have tried so hard to solve their deaths.
Exactly, but maybe he found out who did.
Nope.
Detective Waters shook his head and stormed off. Gino followed, but didn't say anything else. Obviously, he wasn't going to get any further with Mark Waters right now. He needed to find his grandmother's diary.
Chapter 11.
Ta-da! Sheila called out triumphantly as she walked into the living room, carrying a leather-bound book. Gino smiled.
You found my grandmother's diary?
Yes. I thought about it all day today, and the last time I read it was in college. The girls cooed as I read them the part about Joe knocking over Gran, and then rushing her to the bleachers, checking every square inch of her body, making sure he hadn't broken any of her bones,
and then blushing when he realized he was feeling up one of the cheerleaders. You can almost hear her giggling as she wrote it. "You want me to read it to you?" Gino couldn't help but laugh at his romantic wife. If his grandparents hadn't been dead 20 years, he might have been upset with her, but she was a true romantic. She'd said that Gran had always known that Gino and she would marry, and that Sheila just needed to make him work for her. No wonder she'd turned him down so many times. Women could be so manipulative. He lifted his eyes and shook his head.
"No, I don't want you to read the ramblings of a teenage girl in love. I want to know what she wrote concerning Smitty."
"Oh, right. All right then. You make dinner and I'll read."
"Why do I have to make dinner? Can't you just flip through the pages and find that part?"
His wife shook her head and flashed him her best condescending teacher look. "No, your grandmother was a great writer. Since it has been more than 12 years, I don't remember the details. I actually thought she was making most of it up, so I never considered the specifics. It reads like one of my romantic suspense novels, so I may be confusing some of the details. I'll have to read it from start to finish."
Gino threw up his hands. "Fine, but I'm not making dinner. I'll order pizza."
Sheila shrugged and walked off toward her favorite reading spot. "Works for me." She plopped down into the overstuffed chair, tucked her legs beneath her, and then layered her favorite afghan over her midriff. She was down for the count. He'd be lucky to see her in bed before 2 a.m. When the pizza arrived, Gino pulled out 2 pieces of the veggie pizza she always liked, popped open a can of Coke Zero, and placed it on the coffee table in front of her.
"Thanks,"
she mumbled without peeling her eyes away from the tattered diary. She was always looking for a reason to read when he was home, and he'd just given her the go-ahead. Normally, if he wanted her to stop reading and curl up with him on the couch, he'd find a romantic comedy on TV. Otherwise, if he was watching the Discovery Channel or a military documentary, she'd just spend the entire night reading.
"Good?"
he asked.
"Mm-hmm. I can't believe all the scandal. Evidently, one of her close friends had been dating one guy, then slept with another guy, but then she'd wanted to marry the rich guy in town, so she told him."
"Focus, Sheila. Tell me when you get to Smitty. I don't really care about who was sleeping with whom. I'll be right here, waiting. Just tell me when you get to Smitty's scene."
"Fine,"
she said on a sigh. "You know, it's people like you who have ruined great literature, Gino. All you want is the car chases and shootouts. You don't want the lead-up, which is most of the fun. Go watch a movie."
"Yep," Gino agreed. "I don't like to think about what I'm watching. I just want to watch."
Hours later, Sheila shook him awake.
"Gino, oh my God, I know who did it, I think. Well, I'm pretty sure I know who killed them. All of them. And yes, it all started with who was sleeping with whom, as it usually does."
Chapter 12. Smitty stepped backward, his hands held up in front of him. The last customer and employee had left hours ago, but he'd been in the back room, tallying the receipts for the day after cleaning up the kitchen. He'd just opened the side door to leave when Becky motioned him back inside with a gun.
"Calm down, Becky. What's this all about?"
"I knew you were going to be trouble, old man. The first time I saw you in my ward and you rambled on and on about how you knew my parents, I knew I was going to have to kill you. Who else knows?"
she seethed.
"What do you mean?"
"Don't screw around with me, Smitty. Right after the cops had their little powwow with you, they called me 3 times, asking me to come to the station to talk. As many people as I've killed, you think I'd lose a second of sleep killing you?"
Smitty closed his eyes and shook his head.
"I loved your parents, you know. And your mother was one of the most beautiful women I'd ever seen. Maybe too beautiful. She wanted more than Wilson Waters or I could have given her. Wilson offered to marry her, but she wanted the rich life. A life that only Nell Thurber
could give her.
Tears welled up in Smitty's eyes. He loved his wife, and right now, he just wanted to be home with her. But he could never get Sue out of his mind. Neither could Wilson Waters. One of the reasons he'd spent most of his life in the military.
We all knew who your father was, Becky. Every one of us. Except Nell. Poor old Nell. Thought that he'd won Sue fair and square. When in fact, the second she found out that she was pregnant by Wilson, she seduced Nell. Then led him to believe that he'd gotten her pregnant. And that he needed to marry her. Wilson would have made Sue a fine husband. And you probably wouldn't have turned out to be the drug addict you are today if he had raised you. Look at where your half-brother is. A fine, upstanding citizen.
Shut up, she screamed.
Can't handle the truth, hun?
You don't know anything about me. I've bowed down to Nell Thurber and his family my entire life. I was supposed to get everything. Until that stupid old biddy Martha Canal had to grow a conscience after finding God or some nonsense like that. I overheard her telling my mother how it wasn't right that Wilson couldn't see his daughter. Then last week, 20 years after I had to deal with the Canals, my mother admitted to me that she'd gotten pregnant by Wilson and that she needed to tell Nell to clear her conscience. Even though she knew he'd probably cut me out of his will. I'd already known, of course, so I tried to stop her, but she wouldn't listen. So I came back in the middle of the night. I got there too late to stop her, but not too late to see they weren't even sleeping in the same bed. I had to carry my mom upstairs before the drug killed her.
Becky exhaled a long breath.
Now, who else knows?
Smitty laughed.
Like I would tell you. You're just gonna kill me anyway.
She nodded.
Yep, just another robbery. I'll dump the gun and no one will be the wiser.
He laughed again.
Not this time, Becky.
He motioned to the security camera above his head.
You're on candid camera.
Becky swung around as the door opened behind her. But Detective Waters pushed her up against the wall, securing the hand with the gun, while Detective Gino Canal helped untwine her fingers from the gun.
I always wanted a sister, Becky, Detective Waters said. I can't tell you how horrible this makes me feel. Please, tell me you didn't kill our father.
Father,
she spat. Wilson Waters let another man raise me. He deserved to die.
Mark Waters nodded and pushed her through the doorway to the waiting patrol car. Gino approached Smitty.
I'm sorry, Smitty. We weren't sure if she'd show up tonight, so we followed her here from the hospital. We were right outside the door the entire time, though. I was hoping you had a security camera, but we would have come in the moment she made a threat. We wouldn't have let her hurt you.
But now with her break-in, her confession and the camera, well, I thank you for helping us solve the murders of the Thurbers and my grandparents. Hell, maybe even the death of Wilson Waters.
Gino sucked in a breath. How sad. All over money. And at her age. By the way, how did you know she was an addict?
She was my nurse a few months ago. I was in so much pain, and even though the doctors had me on oxycodone, it wasn't helping. When I got out and filled my prescription, I realized Becky was swapping patients' prescription meds for over-the-counter headache pills. After hearing about her parents dying the same way the Canals did, the pieces just started to fall together. And besides, don't laugh.
He shook his head, wondering if Gino would think he was just a crazy old man.
Remember how your pap used to smoke a pipe?
Gino nodded. Smitty chuckled nervously.
Well, I've been having these crazy dreams. I'm in my diner, and a young man keeps coming in who's lost, and I'm supposed to give him directions to find his way. And I swear, in every dream I smell that blasted pipe. You know, that real sweet odor it had. Don't know what he ever liked about it.
Gino didn't gawk at him as though he were crazy. He just nodded.
I was lost, Smitty, but after reading my grandmother's diary tonight, I think I found my way. I had always remembered my grandmother's tone when she'd tell me to listen to that tiny voice inside of me. I'm finally listening.
Gino stared up at the sky and just smiled.
I heard you, Gran.
Detective Mark Waters will be back in the library, where life checks out. A 2-book special edition in the American Haunts collection. Look for it at all major audiobook retailers. This has been The Pit Stop. This stop could be life or death. An American Haunts mystery. Written by Carmen D'Souza. Narrated by Austin Walp. Copyright 2019 by Carmen D'Souza. Production copyright 2019 by Carmen D'Souza.